everybody. Hope everybody is well today. I wanted to introduce you to our guest today, Dr. Heidi Kasevich. Heidi and I met several years ago as I learned about the work she was doing in the Quiet Schools Network, where she was really focused on education and amplifying the needs and highlighting the needs of introverts, both teachers and students and administrators. And I was so fascinated by the work she was doing. And her new book is called Silent Talk, Setting the Stage for Introverts to Thrive in the Classroom and Beyond. You know, I was been asked through the years by parents, by teachers, by educators, if there was a book for them. And now I can say with a lot of confidence that there's a terrific book available. Heidi really brings the right background to this work and to the consulting that she does. Heidi is committed to fostering temperament inclusive cultures, she calls them, where people of diverse personality styles can thrive. You know, she does a lot of coaching and she does training. She visits schools. And I think you're going to be so interested to learn the specific tactics and approaches that she advises schools and people to use there, because we don't really think about the school structure being one of such intensity, no breaks, no chance for introverts to thrive. And so she observes, in fact, you'll hear about her going around as a student and playing the role of a student and feeling the pressures of that. She really grew up as an introvert who never quite felt understood, and she brings great sensitivity, you know, to this topic because she knows she's been there herself, and it took her many years to not tell the story in her head about what it means to be an introvert. And so I'm so proud and so happy that she has graced us with her presence today. And then a little bit more about her, she did work with Susan Cain's Quiet Revolution and actually started that Quiet Schools Network, where she, you know, worked with schools in a very comprehensive way, as you'll hear, and gained a lot of notoriety from that. She has actually been a French teacher, department chair at several schools in New York City, very prestigious schools. And she's also bilingual. She speaks French as she taught it. She also is an expert in European history. Got her degrees from New York University, loves to travel to France, which isn't surprising, and made a move a couple years ago to Laguna Beach, California. So it's been great to, through the pandemic, get to connect with her on Zoom and learn more about Heidi and collaborate with her. And I'm so glad, I'm so happy that I can share her wisdom and insights with you today. And we also have a wonderful video that we'll post that we did on introverted women leaders, where she shared other insights to support some of the things she's going to be saying today. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Heidi. So happy she's here. Hey, Heidi Kasevich, welcome to the Introvert Ally podcast.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm so happy to be here.
And I am thrilled to have you. This is actually our second go around. We did a wonderful video series a couple years ago of introverted women leaders. You were a star on that. I remember getting so many positive comments. And I just love to tell how we connect. We were just talking before we went on air, if you will, about like relationships, you know, and how you're introduced to different people. And you were actually on a chat of a program I was involved with on a panel or something. And your comments were so astute. I said, this person knows about introversion. And then we started talking. We did a call after that. So the rest was history. But yeah, I wanted to just ask you first, tell us a little bit about how you got into this topic of introversion. You have such an interesting story around that. So what was the evolution for you? And yeah, why don't you start with that?
So Jennifer, I spent a couple of decades in the classroom teaching, of course, introverted students as well as extroverted students. And I had a great sensitivity towards their needs, primarily because I was a deep introvert myself, and I have, you know, I have kind of a long history in schools myself, middle school, high school, even college, of holding back, of being quiet, of being told to come out of my shell, of being told I was shy, and feeling incredibly uncomfortable and trying to find ways to, you know, connect with others through writing or through finding my passion projects, finding other outlets. But it was always very, very just hard for me to speak up. And knowing that the simple phrase, just come out of your shell, holds introverts back. And so when I found my voice, really in education as a teacher, and it might be surprising for everyone to learn that based on my research, we have about 70 to 80% of our teachers are more introverted than extroverted. There's something about taking on that role that feels comfortable. In any event, that's how I, quote unquote, came out of my shell. And I had this based on my own personal history and experiences in school. I always had my eye out for those quieter ones. I wanted to make them feel more comfortable.
Yes. Yeah, that makes total sense. And your empathy and understanding goes deep because of that, I'm sure. People are surprised about teachers, aren't they, being, no matter what level, whether they're at elementary all the way through university, that many of them, and you're saying the majority, are introverted. So what is that misconception about? Why do you think that bias exists, that people think that teachers are like that?
I think there's this idea that if you're, you know, in front of any group, you have to be more extroverted. You're loud and outgoing and you love the podium and you're charismatic and you're dynamic. You know, and frankly, a lot of introverts can be all of those things. And there's something really beautiful about being able to kind of close the door. And you have a special relationship between you and your students. And if you, you know, can really cultivate those relationships, particularly one-on-one with your students, it is honestly an introvert's paradise.
And you say it's introvert's paradise. Does that relate to kind of the idea that introverts prefer depth over breadth, so you can really connect with your students? I've seen you do that in some of the stories you've told.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also, you know, you're not, no bright lights on the stage. I mean, you have a kind of a different stage, you know, when you're in a classroom. So you can kind of, you know, get that incredible energy through your teaching, whatever you're passionate about. And this is really how, you know, I ended up finding my voice. It's like, I loved, my first job was teaching French. I loved the French language. And then it became French history and a lot of different history classes. And if you're so, you know, passionate about a topic and you've got relationships that are built with your students, it really becomes honestly a wonderful profession. Aside from the fact that schools can be very, particularly high schools, overstimulating environments.
Yes, absolutely. So I think I just wanted to go back a little bit to what you said about how you saw the light and you realized that you were more introverted. This is such a common story that you hear from successful introverted leaders, that they go through an entire childhood and then beyond until they're adults. And so how did you kind of reverse engineer those messages and so that you could step into your own power and then share that with others? What was the way you in which you really morphed into becoming a more confident as a proud introvert, Heidi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a lot of time, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, I really had an aha moment when reading Susan Cain's book, Quiet, in 2012. So, I mean, I did have an aha moment in realizing, wow, there's nothing wrong with me. And some of my, you know, behaviors were completely normal. So in the school, for example, I needed recharge time. Schools are places of constant social interaction. They're very busy. There might be no passing time between classes, particularly in the high schools in which I taught. And I would have to retire to the only place that was safe for quiet, which was actually the ladies' room. But you can't stay there for very long, right? So, and behaviors like that, and realizing that I was never the first person to raise my hand, and I never expected that of my students. We could talk about that a little bit later. But kind of coming to this realization just gave me a sense of, I guess, confidence and security and it had a name, you know, which was introversion. And it was really at that point that I was able to kind of accelerate my classroom practices and then eventually kind of really take this on as my passion project, which is to help educators to create introvert inclusive classrooms and nurture their quiet leaders.
It's so very important. I may have shared with you one time of dropping off one of my grandchildren to daycare, and I heard the teacher say, well, he's going to be in trouble if he doesn't speak up more in class. You know, it starts very early. And a lot of people, Heidi, have asked for resources for teachers, for parents, and there's been a real lack of that until your book is going to really fill a void. Your book, Silent Talk, Setting the Stage for Introverts, which has come out in January. But you felt compelled after all of your experience consulting and working with the Quiet Schools Network that I wanted you to talk about. But you felt compelled to put some of these ideas in a book. So what was the real message that you wanted to get across through writing that book that I know had some fits and starts through the COVID years?
Absolutely. So there's a gap. Right, there's a gap of knowledge around introvert inclusivity, around even putting temperament or personality as a marker of identity in our schools. So, in all of my research, and I've interviews in the book with many teachers, and I've talked with many students, and I've obviously dealt with lots of students in a lot of different settings. I know that schools skew towards the extrovert, right? In terms of there's an extroverted culture, emphasis on quantity of speech, an emphasis on constant social interaction. And these two, like those sort of, even those twin ideas are really not setting the stage for introverts to thrive. Sort of hence the name of my book. And so what I wanted to do is put together all sorts of strategies that are, you know, research-based so that this book becomes a practical guide for educators from K through university to help them to reach the quiet students and create a more inclusive environment for all of their students. Because as you know well, Jennifer, we've got a third to a half of any population is going to be more introverted. And you wouldn't want to lose their voices.
Not at all. Not at all. And you have a guidebook now to do that. When people ask for help, even parents could share this with teachers, this resource. But what strikes me, Heidi, too, it's so interesting when you say the high numbers of introverts in the classroom, but yet the culture, just like in our workplaces, you know, is predominantly extroverted. It makes me think about who really set that culture in the first place. Right? How did that all get started? That's another question for another day. But that, you know, the people that are really delivering the instruction didn't really have a say in the temperament, right, of the way the values and were set up in the schools.
Right. I think extroverted cultures in general, whether they be in, you know, businesses or in schools, any type of organization, has its roots in sort of the dawn of the industrial and media ages, where it seemed as though you couldn't succeed in life unless you were a fast-talking salesman. If you think about kind of the turn of the century and even the image of like the music man, you know, going door to door, selling his wares. So we have a history, a cultural history of the extrovert ideal. I mean, so I think it's important to bear that in mind. And this is where any kind of bias, you know, towards extroverts, I think comes into play.
And you, that's very astute. Now, I remember telling me about, and you wrote about how in some of the organizations you've been consulted with, it was challenging to get even small practices adopted. Like I remember you talking about the Quiet 10. Maybe you can share a little bit about that you were trying to implement in schools. And there was a little bit of an uphill battle there. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was consulting with one school and talking with educators about how they were experiencing burnout. And burnout, as I mentioned, sort of regarding myself, you know, really is real in these really fast-paced, environments, again, where you're running around, educators are running around from class to class. They often have, you know, lunch duty or, you know, duties after school, and there's just no stopping. And so with this one school, it was a very simple, I thought, initiative involving just having educators take 10 minutes during the school day with literally a sign if they were so lucky to have their own private office, or even if, you know, in a cubicle, some kind of messaging that I just need 10 minutes and I'm kind of offline at that point. And it took a year to even bake this in, this Quiet 10 initiative, into the culture, because it was so foreign to just bring in quiet, to bring in some silence, where there are no expectations for interaction, you know, with others. So it took a long time. So that's, you know, that's just one of the kind of the quiet initiatives. But when, as you know, it's very difficult to shift culture, particularly around quiet times and spaces, around notions of class participation, which are based on quantity of speech rather than quality of speech. And I've seen so many times over and over again that faculty meetings and classes are dominated by those who tend to be able to raise their hand first and speak loudly first, which, as we know, is not the introvert strength.
Right. And it also isn't good for the output in the classroom and the kind of the diversity of ideas getting to the forefront. Other things you've mentioned, and I imagine these will be in the book as well, I can't wait to read it, is, you know, how we write comments, how teachers write comments. These are subtleties that one might think of, admissions interviews, things like that, that where the extrovert bias comes into play. So how do you address these things? Do you make people aware, or what's your strategy for having schools address some of these issues?
Yeah, so it's really, honestly, multi-pronged. We need to start, in my mind, with building an awareness of the culture, right? So questions like, I like to ask whoever is part of sort of the task force at a school, I like to ask these three questions. So, to what extent do we favor bold talkers over reflective listeners as school leaders? Do we prize action and stimulation over deliberation and solitude? Do we require constant collaboration in open spaces? And these questions kind of can talk about culture in the open and unconscious biases in the open. And so kind of coupling that with self-awareness, just educating educators about what it means to be more introverted or more extroverted, is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. For themselves and their students, right?
For themselves and their students. I fundamentally believe that we need to start with faculty first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talked about a task force, you know, a kind of a culture changer task force.
Yeah.
We do, you know, professional development first, and then we obviously, it's, you know, via the educators, we can then work with our students as, you know, as they become, you know, kind of expert, quote unquote, quiet ambassadors. But you also mentioned the anecdotal comments or the narratives that we write. And this is a particularly sticky area for, you know, around the extrovert ideal. It is often, and I've seen it all too often, you know, a student is really admonished for being quiet. He or she is quiet and needs to speak up more in order to get a better grade.
Get out of their shell, right?
So-and-so needs to come out of their shell. And we can change those narratives in, you know, I think simple but yet profound ways, because that language really matters. That language affects the student who reads it, affects the parent who also reads it. And then, you know, so it's like, you know, it's this whole dynamic between the school and the family. So I work with faculty to help create, you know, quiet, friendly comments.
What would be an example of one? Could you think of one offhand that you might encourage as a model?
Sure. So in keeping with the title of the book, Silent Talk, I am a proponent of reflective pausing in classes. So we allow that think time or that listen time before anyone participates verbally. So a comment, quiet, friendly comment that honors reflective pausing would be, for example, Joshua uses his time wisely to ponder and consider many options before contributing to class discussions.
Oh, what a wonderful shift from he doesn't speak up enough in class.
Right. And needs to just come out of his shell.
Which, you know, again, you talk about the connection to the workplace, and it's so similar. So many things I'm hearing about the leader doing their own work first, right? Before trying to influence, or they can influence unless they are aware of their own biases and their own strengths and weaknesses. And so many other things around like how we frame our performance reviews with workers, right? Which can really de-inflate. If there's such a word, the inflation goes down, right? They're not motivated. When they hear that, that sticks with people, right? It's seen as a pejorative that you're not speaking up in meetings enough. That I can't tell you how many times I get that comment told to me as a negative. Oh, that's what I was told. And how do I handle that?
Yeah, I've seen that, honestly, class participation rates, you know, connected to quantity rather than quality of speech can often account for 50%. So 50% of a student's grade is based on just how many times they raise their hand in class. And I've seen really in schools across the country. So it takes a lot of work. And one of the ways is via those, you know, anecdotal comments, how we write about our students, you know, and getting that message across that, you know, listening, taking time to think, are as valued as verbal participation.
And you know, it's helping the extroverts too when they have that structure to kind of, oh yeah, I can actually think before I talk. Absolutely. You talk in, can you tell, we've been talking about a lot of the challenges and the problems. What could you share with us any success stories that, that really resonate with you, either individually or with a team or a circle that you worked with?
Yeah, for sure. So I have done a lot of work around building in quiet spaces in schools. And I like to think of it kind of as almost like concentric circles. So what can you do in your classroom to create a quiet nook for students? And I've had, you know, faculty really take risks along these lines, because it's not, particularly in schools where the open space dominates, you know, everything's open, there are windows everywhere. There's
too much stimulation for introverts, right?
Right, exactly. You know, there are collaborative tables and there's like team time, which I'd love to get back to at some point. But, you know, I have, you know, one teacher who proudly said to me in an interview, in nearly every room in our school, there's now a quiet corner, a cozy corner, or a breakout room, or somewhere where kids can go when they're feeling like, I need to separate. And she adds, it's not a punishment place. Because often in our history, in America, right, quiet, you be quiet, right? That's punishment.
That's right.
Rather than quiet, please. Let's think, you know, let's create an even playing field for those who think to speak and create opportunities for those who speak to think.
And how is it, what are the results you're hearing? The fact that it's certainly spread in this school or in several of them. What kind of feedback are you getting as far as the effectiveness?
Honestly, really positive feedback. You know, I think kids are having fewer sort of meltdowns.
Wow.
Right? So because they have, like, those who need a recharge space can get it. And I've also, you know, talked with schools about building in even a little quiet time in between classes. It sounds trite, but if you have passing time between classes rather than zero passing time, you're also just giving students a chance to, like, reflect and recharge and, you know, get ready for the next one. And I can tell you, I was recently at a school where I actually sort of took on the role of a student, and Jennifer, it is exhausting. I mean, now you know I skew.
You did like an introverted boss thing. You put the what was that movie where they switch roles, right?
But it's actually a great way to figure out like what's happening with your culture.
So tell us a little bit more. What was that day like? What happened?
I mean, you're just running around, and then you're sitting down, and then the next teacher, you know, is like is ready to start, and you're jumping from subject to subject. And so I have worked with some schools to even build in sort of quiet time or whatever you want to do, meditation time or kind of reflection time, or even using an activity like an open session where kids can kind of air out their feelings a bit before, you know, the hard work of, you know, academia begins.
With so many of our public schools today, you know, there's such pressure to, you know, make the test scores and get things done. The teachers probably, I would imagine some of your influence has to be around showing teachers that trade-off of maybe taking 5 minutes is going to pay off right in the impact of the students. And so that may be sometimes what you need to do. Is that accurate?
Exactly. And that is not simple, right? Because we do want those test scores. So it's counterintuitive that actually slowing down at the right pace, and that's, you know, that is, you know, kind of up to the school and the individual teacher too, but slowing down can often lead to honestly better test results.
And I know you and I both do yoga, and we probably can relate to that too, right? If you do yoga when you're the busiest, having a busiest week, it's going to help you when you think it's counterintuitive. I don't have time.
Right. So you make time.
You make time. Exactly. Exactly. So again, the book, Silent Talk, Setting the Stage for Introverts. Anything else you want folks to know about that that you discovered in writing and researching this book? I know it was a long road. I'm so proud of you that it's going to be hitting the bookstores, and people are going to be learning about it in schools. I imagine through workshops and services, the culture is, it's great to have that as an anchor to build off. But anything that you learned from this work, Heidi, that you want to share with everybody in terms of the key learnings from the book, from writing the book?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the question. It's not a simple answer to that question because I learned so much as you've been in school and conduct interviews. I mean, I certainly learned that the extrovert ideal is prevalent, and that when we want to shift culture around quiet, it is school specific. So as I mentioned earlier, kind of seeing what angle you want to take, you know, if you are at the forefront of this cultural shift, you know, whether you want to focus on the anecdotal comments or how leaders, you know, for student government are elected, you know, or if you have a DEI director sort of on the ground who is really, you know, excited about this work and wants to add, you know, personality as a marker of identity. So I learned that it really is school specific. And I would add, you know, I embrace the title of the book for a very specific reason. So, you know, this silent talk. And so when I think about, you know, an introvert friendly or an introvert inclusive environment, you know, I think about bringing in, you know, school bringing in silence and quiet reflective spaces in a way that balances group work and teamwork. So I always like to say I'm not waging a war on socializing or on teamwork, because if we do teamwork right through techniques like brainwriting, you know, we can have highly inclusive, highly productive groups coming up with, you know, the next great ideas. So in my mind, it's really about a balance and seeing silence and talk on a continuum.
Yin yang, right? The yin yang.
Exactly, the yin yang. Yes.
Since this area is now being open wide, this education area of education, how can we be introvert allies within that realm of education? What can we do with our teachers, with our students, to spread this message, to create awareness, to make change? Any thoughts about the role our listeners can play?
I think it all begins with awareness. You know, first with self-awareness, honestly, about where you as a listener fall on the IE spectrum, understanding that, you know, if we're honestly wherever you fall on the spectrum, because we know we have extrovert ideal cultures, you know, an understanding of what it means to be introverted. Like, there's an incredible sensitivity to stimulation from the outside world. There's a threshold, you know, at which point an introvert really needs to recharge alone. So kind of really being aware of the plight of introverts, that there are a lot of stereotypes around introverts, as I mentioned earlier. And then really just even in family life or, you know, your home life, if you're not an educator, how can I help any introverted member of my family to feel as though they are just as valued as anyone else who maybe skews more extroverted? So an example I love to give, Jennifer, about for families around, say, social events, is provide a long runway before a social event. It's all about preparation and practice. So if you've got, say, a birthday party or a family event or a wedding coming up, you know, you want to preview the event. You might want to engage in kind of role-playing activities. Your introverted, I say, I'm going with families right now, family member is going to want to know what, you know, what's happening. Who's going to be there? How can I get a break time? Can we leave a little bit early, you know, if need be? But also knowing that, you know, introverts have incredible strengths. And I say this, and I say it with hopefully a lot of passion. Introverts are incredible social beings too.
Absolutely.
They do like to socialize. There's just, you know, a certain amount that can happen in 1 week or in 1 month or even in 1 day. But knowing that there's that, you know, that proclivity towards that one-on-one socializing, which also translates beautifully into networking, asking questions, listening. So it's kind of that, I guess I just go back to that word awareness.
I would totally agree. And your marching orders are heard by this extrovert and introvert ally. The time is right now for us to, you know, reach into the schools. This is where a lot of these messages get either placed incorrectly or allow people to thrive in their school years and beyond. So Heidi, you're making such an incredible difference. The book is Silent Talk, Setting the Stage for Introverts. And where can people or how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way?
So the best way is through my website, which is caseleadership.com.
All right. You made the Kesevich name a little easier there with the case leadership.
Yes.
We'll put resources on the website, on the show notes. But I really so appreciate you taking the time today to share your wisdom about a topic that so needs addressing. And you are definitely the right person to be doing it. So congratulations on the book. And I hope all of you will run out and get a copy, Silent Talk, Setting the Stage for Introverts. And if you're not in school, give it to the teachers you know. I think even this book can help prevent burnout as well as if we look at that larger problem. So thank you so much, Heidi. It's been a delight to have you on today.
Thank you, Jennifer. I've so appreciated this opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode in season 3 of our podcast. I do love hearing from you, so please reach out to me at my email address at jennifer@jenniferkalmwaller.com and feel free to visit our website where we have many free resources. Also, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there as well, and we have a newsletter that comes out bi-weekly. Mark your calendar for June 28th when the new third edition of The Introverted Leader comes out. It will be available for pre-order soon. In conjunction with that, we're offering 2 new exciting virtual programs for your organization, and you can find more detail on the website. But these do include introvert-focused strategies for the hybrid workplace. So again, great to have you here. Thank you so much for listening as we continue to march together as introvert allies.